Hare
Abai's interest was insatiable. Atulananda told him how in 1925, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati had led a big procession circumambulating the holy land of Navadvip, with deities riding in the backs of gorgeously decorated elephants, and with devotees from all parts of India attending. Envious professional priests who opposed Srila Bhakti Siddhanta's acceptance of disciples from all castes had employed a gang to help them hurl bricks and rocks on the procession. But Srila Bhakti Siddhanta had continued undaunted. In 1926, he had toured throughout India, preaching the message of Lord Chaitanya. He had also installed deities in the large temple of Sri Chaitanya Math in Mayapur. And a year ago, he had begun publishing his magazine, Sajjana Toshini, in three languages, including an English edition called The Harmonist. After several visits and hours of discussion on the activities and philosophy of Chaitanya, of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, Atulananda brought Mr. Day to the Allahabad ashram. Shortly thereafter, the Mutt relocated to a rented house on South Malacca Street near Rambagh, just a short walk from Abhai's house. Now it was possible for Abai to visit every evening after work. He would attend the mat where he would play the mridanga, surprising the brahmacharis with his already developed mridanga playing skills. He sang bhajans with them and sometimes took the lead part in the congregational singing. He would also bring important persons from Allahabad to visit the mat. For the brahmacharis, Abai seemed to give new life to their ashram. And for Abai, new life had come to him. In his reunion with the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Yeah. So this we see here is that in this one story about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is that he is performing his Sankirtan. And whenever there's actually strong preaching, anything is actually very established and working well, it will create two parties. Those who support, those who don't, right? So, because if you're doing nothing, who cares? You understand? So then you don't really have any necessarily serious enemies, you don't have any supporters. You know, if you do, it's very few. But if you're doing something dynamic, then you're going to have very enthusiastic supporters, and you're going to have those who don't like what you're doing. Does that make sense? That's just the phenomenon of the material world. It's always going to happen. Yes? So, therefore, he found that he had these problems, right? So then, that means the preaching is going well. So it's a symptom of the preaching going well. At the same time, it's not that this has come up because he's in callous, right? It comes up because he's actually doing the right thing. And those who don't appreciate that, then those who are cheating, they won't appreciate. Does that make sense? So we see is that in the preaching, no matter where it is, if you're being careful that you're properly preaching, you know, the message of Lord Chaitanya according to the previous acharyas, you know, following proper etiquette and everything like that, then you can see is that if you get opposition, then the thing to do, like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, is you don't stop. You don't give up. You continue. Right? Does this make sense? You don't think, oh, we're disturbing people, we shouldn't do like this. You're always going to disturb people. If you're doing something right, you will disturb people. You know what I'm saying? Because in the material world, the natural tendency, people are envious. Right? Does that make sense? So one has to be able to distinguish these things. If we're preaching the right message, or delivering it very nicely, then where's the problem? Yes? What do you think? In 1930, Gaur Mohan's health took a turn for the worst. And his family members gathered around him, thinking that his end had come. Abai had been in Bombay on business, and it was late when he reached Allahabad and knocked on the door. Gaur Mohan told his daughter, Rajeshri, "Open the door, Abai has come." She replied, "No, he is in Bombay." Gaur Mohan repeated, "I tell you that he has come. You open the door." It was about midnight. She went downstairs, opened the door, and found that her brother had indeed come. Abai went to his father. "How are you?" "I am all right," Gaur Mohan replied. "You just take rest for the night." The next morning, Abai called the doctor. "How your father is living, we don't know," the doctor told him. He has practically no pulse. He has been living without food for several months. Abai asked his father, "What is your wish? Tell me." "Why are you asking?" his father replied. "Has the doctor told you something?" Abai said, "No, I am asking because I am staying in Bombay and you are here. So if you have any wish, any intention, let me know. I am here. I am here for you." Gaur Mohan told him to give their cow to the Allahabad Gaudiya Mat. So Abai took the cow along with her calf and donated them to the Mat. Then again he asked his father, "Have you got any other wish?" Then again his father asked, "Has the doctor told you anything?" "No, no, I am simply asking because for my business I have to go." Then Gaur Mohan said, "Invite all the Gaudiya Vaishnavas of Allahabad and other Vaishnavas also. Let them chant Hari Nam in the evening, and you supply them with good food. That is my wish." Abai arranged it, and in the evening the Hari Nam started. At 11 o'clock, all of them took prasad and left. That night, Gaur Mohan passed away. Abai felt the loss of his father painfully. His father had given him everything he had ever wanted, had been careful to raise him as a pure Vaishnava, and had always worshipped Radha and Krishna. Although Abai was a competent young man, he felt lost without his dearmost protector and friend. More than anyone else, Gaur Mohan was the one who had always guided Abai and treated him as the most special person. Without his father, Abai now felt hopeless. He suddenly felt the same dependency he had felt as a small boy, but now without his father. The one who had always treated him as a pet son, deserving all loving attention. The one who had given him whatever he had wanted, and who had literally prayed to every holy man he met that his son become a great devotee of Srimati Radharani. that best well-wisher was now gone. On the day of Shraddha, 13 days after Gormohan passed away, Abhay and his brother posed for a formal photograph. In accordance with the religious custom, the two sons had shaved their heads. The photograph now shows Abhay and his brother sitting on either side of a formal portrait of their father. The portrait is on an elevated stand and is surrounded with dark cloth. The picture is nicely framed. Gormohan looks old but still thoughtful and intent, not so old as in the former portrait, where he looked emaciated with eyes almost dimmed. Abhay, with his head shaved, looks like a renounced monk, and his body is covered with the robes of a monk, simple drapes in broad folds covering the upper and lower parts of his body. He looks quite different than he had in the picture that was taken in the same place, with the same rough carpet on the floor, years before. In that picture, with his wife and children gathered around him, he was very much the young householder, surrounded by his responsibilities of family, and looking like he knew how to conduct himself well and move energetically in the world. But in this photo, although his children are present, they are seated unattended on the floor. Abhay's left hand is on his knee, poised and yet at rest, whereas in the former picture, his left hand had been holding his restless son. Abhay's wife is not present. In this picture, Abhay looks striking. One cannot tell that he usually had a head of hair and a mustache, which he has only recently shorn for the mournful observance of his father's passing away. Instead, this seems to be his natural appearance. There is a mysterious spiritual air about him, as one might expect in a meditating saint. His look is neither agitated, nor cheerful, nor sorrowful. It is peaceful and knowing, as if he has suddenly become a sadhu on the day his father has passed away. He looks like a sadhu his father envisioned he would become. He looks as if he is and always was a sadhu, and has suddenly been revealed as such on this day. Even by the most casual inspection of the photo, it appears that by shaving his head and dressing in robes with no shirt or shoes, Abhay has become a sadhu. Chapter 4. How shall I serve you? Okay. Quote, I have every hope that you can turn yourself into a very good English preacher if you serve the mission to inculcate the novel impression of Lord Chaitanya's teachings to the people in general as well as philosophers and religionists. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, in a letter to Srila Prabhupada, December 1936. In October of 1932, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati led a group of hundreds of disciples and pilgrims on a month-long parikram, or circumambulation, of the sacred places of Vrindavan. Vrindavan residents and visitors perform parikram by following the old dry bed of the Jamuna River and circumambulating the Vrindavan area, stopping at the places where Krishna performed his pastimes when he roamed in Vrindavan 5,000 years ago. Abhay had wanted to attend Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's parikram, but couldn't because of his work. Nevertheless, on the 20th day of the pilgrimage, he traveled from Allahabad, intent on seeing Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati again, and hoping to join the parikram party at Koshi, just outside Vrindavan, at least for a day. The parikram Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had organized was one of the biggest ever seen in Vrindavan. By engaging so many people, he was using the parikram as a method of mass preaching. Even as early as 1918, when he had first begun his missionary work, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's specific contribution had been his emphasis on preaching. Prior to his event, the Vaishnavas had generally avoided populated places, and they performed their worship in wholly secluded places like Vrindavan. Even when they traveled to preach, they would maintain the simple mode of the impoverished mendicant. The Goswami followers during Lord Chaitanya's time had lived in Vrindavan underneath trees, one night under one tree, the next night under another. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, whose aim was on preaching worldwide, knew that the renunciation of the Goswamis was not possible for Westerners. Therefore, he wanted to introduce the idea that devotees could even live in big palatial temple. He had accepted a large donation from a wealthy Vaishnav merchant, and in 1930 had constructed a large marble temple in the Bagh Bazar section of Calcutta. In the same year, he had moved along with his followers from a small rented quarters at Ultadanga to the impressive new quarters. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was demonstrating that although a devotee should not spend a cent for his own sense gratification, he could spend millions of rupees for the service of Krishna. While previously Vaishnavas would not have had anything to do with the mechanized contrivances introduced by the British, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, on the authority of scripture, was demonstrating a higher understanding. It was Rupa Goswami, the great disciple of Lord Chaitanya, who had written, quote, "One is perfectly detached from all materialistic worldly engagements, not when one gives up everything, but when one employs everything for the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. This is understood to be perfect renunciation in yoga." Right? So that's Yukta Vairagya. Is not that you yourself give it up because you don't want it, but that because you engage in the Lord's service. Right? Now, what would be the difference between these two? Anything?
It's not for one's own sense gratification.
Yes, it's not for one's own sense gratification. So what would that mean? If you say it's not for your sense gratification, what does that infer?
It's for the service of the Lord.
It's for the service of the Lord. Okay. But, and that specifically, bringing that down is a point. Right? It means you have your surf, yourself. Yes, your surfness. Does that mean you're covered in soap, or does that mean you're just a very common person? Or does that mean you're a common person using surf soap? But then you would probably be called surf rather than just surf. Or does it mean you're from Hawaii and all you do is spend all your time down at the beach? Any ideas?
Common
man. Okay. So, yes, this is the Vaishnava principle, right? Feeling himself servant of the servants, so therefore. So, if you have yourself, right, as a servant, and you have Krishna's pleasure, then what does that infer?
Sacrifice.
You understand? Right? In this case, if you're taking, the point you're trying to establish is sacrifice, right? So you have yourself and you have pleasure of Krishna. So if you're going to connect yourself and pleasure of Krishna, then what would that indicate? But the pleasure of Krishna comes from sacrifice, or service, right? Devotional activity. And pleasure of Krishna, can that be separated from devotional service? Can you please him any other way? No. So that means the contact between the middle and the major, right, is complete. Yes? Because devotional service means pleasing Krishna. Pleasing Krishna means devotional service. So it's a perfect, match. Yes, means your logic is perfect. It can't be overturned. Right? So that would mean then by you renouncing, okay, you could say it's service in one way, but it's the service direct.
Yes?
means you somebody offers you opulence, you don't accept it because you don't want to be engaged in sense gratification or anything for yourself. Is that dynamic?
No.
No, it's static. Means nothing has actually been done. It's a mood, so that's good, that you want to be renounced because you're a devotee and this and that. But what are we left with? You know what I'm saying? What aspect of Sambandhavideya and Prayojana did we just deal with? Sambandha, yes, means we as a Gaudiya Vaishnava, we're renounced, we don't get involved in material things. Okay? So that's nice. But Sambandha, as we understand, is a mood. Right? It means there may be facts there, but it's not dynamic, it's not moving. You know? Kind of like his head does move sometimes. When he goes like this, then it moves. So you have to see the dynamics of it, right? Like that. Okay? So, what's missing in this formula? Yes? Abhideya and Prayojana. Okay, now, according to our previous logic, then What are those two things that are missing?
Sacrifice and Krishna's pleasure.
Yes, so just because you renounce doesn't mean that it's actually pleasure to Krishna. You could be renouncing just because you think on the appropriate platform of either religion or morality that it's the proper thing to do. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
What do you think? Yes, okay. We got a word today. So then that would mean then if you take, so it's not that dynamic. So now if you did that to please Krishna, okay, it's there. But the service is only as much as basically maintaining a mood. Like that. You guys are a relay team or something? When the one head comes up, the other one goes down. And that head comes up, the other one goes down. You guys plan it, you time it or something like that? You watch beats or something. You just know telepathy makes it all happen. Okay, so. Yes. So we see it's not, but the other one where the donation's given, you accept it on behalf of service to Krishna, then engage it in service to Krishna, then what does that mean? That's yukta vairagya, because now you are, so therefore, why is this yukta vairagya superior?
You're doing something.
Results in sacrifice.
Sacrifice, yes. That sacrifice is then being done to please Krishna. You're taking responsibility. Oh, I see. Now you got it's a double, the triple thing. Now I got it. Okay, it's expanding. Maybe you guys could get it where one starts here and then like a dominoes, it just goes around, goes to the guy in the middle. And then he goes down, then he comes up, and then you all go back around like that. More entertaining, I think. Like that. Okay. So, therefore we see is that there's one, it's got two more aspects to it than the one. It's dynamic instead of static, right? You're taking actual responsibility. The other one, of course, you're taking responsibility to maintain a certain standards, but it's going on. It's that responsibility is taken to please Krishna through activity, right? So now, of these two, which would you think would be superior? Yes? Anything superior? So, is marbles superior to Satguti? Or is Satguti superior to, sliding in the soap at the pumps and bouncing off the pumps into the drain? How would you make the hierarchy? Satguti is the highest. Okay, then after Satguti? I take it you're not much of a marble man. Sliding in the pumps, okay, and then marbles is on the bottom. So you prefer to keep your marbles rather than go crazy and lose them. Okay, see, smart man, smart man. You have a different order you would put it in? Yeah. Not exactly, okay. And you? His sounds reasonable, okay. Ah, now here is the point. Now, he's going to say marbles first, but now the question is after marbles, is sliding in the pumps or is satguti? He put sliding in the pumps second and marbles third, but you put marbles first. Yeah, okay, then they just moved it up one and then it just slides down. So there's a natural order, you see. Okay, now if we ask G here, which would be the most important of these three, he would probably start with sliding in the pumps. But now after sliding in the pumps, which is more important, Sadguti or marbles? Have you ever tried this? Now you just when they're cleaning the pumps, they put Maha Clean, they put some soap, so the whole drain is slippery, and then get in at the one end and slide all the way down. Radharaman. Oh, I see. It's a size thing. But he can go on his own, or you have to push him with the broom?
Okay.
Okay, you go head first, feet first. It doesn't matter. It could be either way. Okay. Okay. Okay, do we understand this point of Yukta Vairagya? Now, in this point of Yukta Vairagya, what is being engaged? Material energy. Material energy, and of material energy specifically, what kind of things?
Opulence.
Opulence. And what is the normal thing that is done with opulence?
Use it for your own sense.
Yes. Or, in this case, that the Vaishnavas would do?
Use it for Krishna.
And if they're, it means that's the final step. So what's the next step?
Use it for yourself and offer the results of that to Krishna.
Okay, no, that's the perfection, but we're talking about in between. What's the other alternative that the Vaishnava is doing here?
Serve the Vaishnavas?
But a little bit less than that.
Do it yourself, but just connect what you're doing to Krishna. Dovetail it.
Okay, means you're all working. Means that these are all the right, all good answers. But it's not okay. What we're looking for is what is the considered other alternative that is not as recommended. No. What are the other Gaudiya Vaishnavas doing that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur took it a step beyond that? It's not so much they're not preaching, because he says they would preach.
They're not preaching to all classes.
They're not preaching to all classes, yes. But in connection with this particular thing of Yukta Vairagya.
They don't use it,
so they Vairagya it, right? They don't Yukta it. Right? In other words, they renounce it, but don't connect it to Krishna. Don't use it for Krishna's service, right? Now, this is a very important point, is that what you're yuktaing, what you're connecting to Krishna is things that you would normally renounce, right? Because of its nature of opulence or sense gratification, right? But it has the thing of it could be used either way. Right? It means if you use it for Krishna, it's not sense gratification. If you use it for yourself, it is. Right? In other words, does that make sense? Now, in this equation, have you noticed anything that opposes the Vedic culture? In this formula? Is there a necessity to oppose the Vedic culture to affect Yukta Vairagya? Right? You understand? In other words, you can perfectly follow the Vedic culture and apply Yukta Vairagya. So Yukta Vairagya doesn't mean not using the culture, not following the etiquette. It just means that instead of using facility for yourself, you use it for Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah? Right? Very, very important point, because many people think anything I want to use, then that's Yukta Vairagya. No. The Yukta Vairagya means that what you're using, it's actually being used for Krishna's pleasure. That means you'd have to use it in a way that would be pleasing to Krishna. Does that make sense? Yes? No?
When I say in that way, how can the games played by the gods be
Yukta Vairagya? I don't know if you would call it Yukta Vairagya.
How can it be engaged?
How can it be engaged? Well, where would the ability to be good at it come from? From Krishna. So in other words, if you are actually good at these sports, then that would be because of it's Krishna's blessings, like that. So one would always have to be aware of that and be, you know, thankful to Krishna for one's ability. Like that. Does that make sense? That would be there. But now, in doing that, do you need to go against any regulations of Vaishnava etiquette? No. That's the whole point. Is that the culture, the Vaishnava culture, always applies. What is that nice green spot? Yeah, all over the place. What are those? Medicine. Okay. Oh, okay. But a green betadine. Okay. So the purple is more attractive. Right. Does this make sense? Because otherwise many kind of make mistakes on this, and they don't really see how those are connecting properly. Yes? If everything is God's energy, then why should anything be given up? If God is good, then his energy is also good. Material things should not be used for one's own enjoyment, but they should be and they could be and should be used for the service of Krishna. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta wanted to use the most modern printing presses. He wanted to invite worldly people to hear Krishna katha in gorgeously built temples. And for their preaching, devotees should not hesitate to ride in the best conveyances, wear sewn cloth, or live amidst material opulence. Yeah. So in other words, all these things of the world are being used for Krishna, but the culture is still being practiced. Does that make sense? There's always a culture that's there. So that's the mood. That's the essential point, is the mood. Right, then you have a natural form that goes with that mood. But when that mood is not used, then the tendency also will be you won't use the form. Right? You won't follow the proper traditional elements of Vaishnava etiquette, right, or culture. One will follow, you know, some kind of culture that's connected with those forms that you're using. But the point is the culture stays the same, the mood stays the same, though you may use forms that are not traditionally used. Right, but they have to be used according to the proper mentality. Right? Does that make sense? Just like Srila Prabhupada, his preferred dress would be the Vaishnava dress. Right? But for business, if he had to dress in the British clothes, then he would look like a gentleman. Does that make sense? Because the Vaishnava dress is the dress of a gentleman. Therefore, Yeah, jeans pants, especially the ones that look like that you should have thrown them out before you bought them. Right? Okay. So that would mean is therefore you're making that connection. You know, if you're the Indian cooking is very refined, very developed, right? It's very balanced in the meals, in its presentation, it looks very good, right? Because it's all for Krishna. Therefore, if you're going to cook something that is, would be more of other cultures, modern cultures, therefore it still should be very refined, nicely presented, proper taste, proper balances, proper balance in the menu. It's still served in the same way, you know, with the proper attention and everything like that. Does that make sense? So the culture doesn't change. Very important to understand that. Yeah? That's a very... So that means then anything could be used, but it wouldn't be for themselves. So you have to be very careful. But just, yeah. It was in this spirit, so spirit means the mood, that he had constructed the building at Bagh Bazar and there displayed a theistic exhibition, a series of dioramas assembled from finely finished, painted and dressed clay dolls. Such dolls are a traditional art form in Bengal, but the staging of nearly 100 elaborate displays depicting the Vaishnava philosophy and the pastimes of Lord Krishna had never before been seen. The theistic exhibition created a sensation, and thousands attended it daily. 100 dioramas. You know, that's big. That's big. In that same year, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had taken about 40 disciples on a parikram all over India. A tour featuring many public lectures and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's meetings with important men. By 1932, he had 3 presses in different parts of India, printing 6 journals in various Indian dialects. In Calcutta, a politician had asked Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati how he could possibly print his Nadia Prakash as a daily... how he could print it, his Nadia Prakash, as a daily newspaper. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had replied that it was not so amazing if one considered that in Calcutta alone, there were almost 6 ordinary daily papers. Although Calcutta was but one city amongst all the cities of India, India was but one nation amongst many nations on the earth, and the earth was but an insignificant planet amidst all the other planets in the universe. This universe was one amongst universes so numerous that each was like a single mustard seed in a big bag of mustard seeds. And the entire material creation was only one small fraction of the creation of God. Nadia Prakash was not printing the news of Calcutta or the earth, but news from the unlimited spiritual sky, which is much greater than all the material worlds combined. So if the daily Calcutta newspapers could report limited earthly tidings, then a small wonder that Nadia Prakash could appear daily. In fact, a newspaper about the spiritual world could be printed every moment. There were not a shortage of interested readers. So he's asking how... Yes.
What's a diorama?
I mean, you wonder if that's something to do like with a telerama or any of those kind of things. 100 dioramas. So you want to know if they're edible or can they also be taken down and slid in the pumps in the drain or something? Diorama, when you take, you depict a particular scene or, you know, a pastime or a point you want to make by having, a physical representation. You know, just like you have a play, but this is like dolls. You know, the dolls are all dressed up and all that and put in different poses, so different pastimes or different things. You know, like the, you've seen that that set of pictures where you have the little baby and then a little bit bigger, and then the young man and then old man and then he dies, right? But have you ever seen that not as a picture? No. Okay. Samadhis, you know, upstairs, you've been upstairs in the second floor of the samadhi? You have all those things? No. Have you been to Jagannath Mandir? And when you walk in the gate on the left side, there's those little rooms, and inside there's like little dramas. Yeah? Those are dioramas. You get it? You know, in other words, it's dolls put together in a display. Right? Does that make sense? So he had 100 of those. So like it's up there at Jagannath Mandir, then there's what, maybe like 15 or something, he had 100. Yes? And this would have been back when, you know, making dioramas was a very major kind of event. It still is. These people are still very good, so.
Is the temple still there?
The temple, Bagh Bazar, yes, it's still there. Yeah, very nicely done. Doesn't seem to have necessarily the same dynamism, but it's still there. The Bagh Bazar mud. Oh, maybe you should ask Kafriti Moshai that when you go in for sometimes your Calcutta Parikrams that you drop by there, because it's very near Chittaranjan. In fact, it's about 3 blocks away, maybe 4. You don't go there? Is this guy from our school?
You can go there from us.
But you've never been there. Oh, okay, you've been there. So. One of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's publications was in English, The Harmonist, and it advertised the Vrindavan Parikram of 1932. So this is a quote from there. His Divine Grace Paramahamsa Sri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, the spiritual head of the Madhva Gaudiya Vaishnava community, following Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, has been pleased to invite the cooperation of all persons of every nationality, irrespective of caste, creed, color, age, or sex, in the devotional function of circumambulation of the holy sphere of Braja in the footsteps of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna Chaitanya, who exhibited the Leela of performing the circumambulation of Sri Braja Mandal during the winter of 1514 AD. You know, that's one sentence. Okay, so when they say that they're doing it, because they even give the date, Lord Chaitanya went on Parikram. Not bad. When Abai had heard from the members of the Allahabad Chaitanya Math about the Parikram, he had been fully occupied with his local Prayag pharmacy business and traveling to secure new accounts. But he had calculated how he could join at least for a day or two. And he had fixed his mind on going again on obtaining the darshan of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Srila Prabhupada. I was not initiated at the time of the Parikram, but I had very good admiration for these Gaudiya Math people. They were very kind to me, so I thought, what are these people doing in this Parikram? Let me go. So I meet them at Koshi. The Parikram party traveled with efficient organization. An advanced group bringing all the bedding and tents would go ahead to the next day's location, where they would make camp and set up the kitchen. Meanwhile, the main party, bearing the deity of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and accompanied by kirtan singers, would visit the places of Lord Krishna's pastimes, and in the evening arrive at camp. The camp was divided into sections and arranged in a semicircle, and pilgrims were assigned to a particular section for the night. In the center were the quarters of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and the deity of Lord Chaitanya, and close by the tents of the sannyasis. There were separate camps for ladies and men. Married couples did not stay together. There was also a volunteer corps of guards who stayed up all night, patrolling the area. At night, the camp, with its hundreds of tents, with gas lit
and campfires resembled a small town, and local people would come to see, astonished at the arrangements. In the evening, everyone would gather to hear a discourse by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati.
And so whatever he would do it big. You know, so Srila Prabhupada, that was his point also. You have to do it in some way that it's going to be amazing. So either by size, or, you know, wonderful arrangements, thing like that, or by the opulence of it. In some way, it should be impress the people, right? Because people will come to just see it. People are camping out and following this program. The local villagers would come just to see what's going on, because you do this, it would be 10,000 people. Right? 10,000 people, you're going to camp for 10,000 people would take up a huge area. You know, so all this, how well it's managed and all that, and it's well lit, and all the guards, and, you know, so it's very nice. The pilgrims would rise early each morning and chant Hare Krishna together. Then carrying the deity of Lord Chaitanya, they would set out in procession. Kirtan groups, the police band, the lead horse, the flag bearers, and all the pilgrims. Wow, so they had a police band. They also had a horse. The lead horse. So does that mean there are other horses? Yeah, or it could be just the horse is leading the procession, you know, and the kirtan and the bands are going in front. The flag bearers and all the pilgrims. They traveled to the holy places, the birthplace of Lord Krishna, the place where Lord Krishna slew Kamsa, the Adi Keshava temple, Radhakund, Shamakund, and many others. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's massive pilgrimage had been rolling on with great success when he met with serious opposition. The local temple proprietors in Vrindavan objected to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's awarding the sacred Brahminical thread to devotees not born in the families of Brahmanas. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, throughout his lectures and writings, had repeatedly proven from the Vedic scriptures that one is a Brahman not by birth but by qualities. He often cited a verse from Sanatan Goswami's Hari Bhakti Vilas, stating that just as base metal, when mixed with mercury, can become gold, so an ordinary man can become a Brahman if initiated by a bona fide spiritual master. He also often cited a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, in which the great sage Narada tells King Yudhishthira that if one is born in the family of a Shudra, but acts like a Brahman, he has to be accepted as a Brahman. And if one is born in the family of a Brahman, but acts as a Shudra, he is to be considered a Shudra. But notice the difference in there is that the devotee born in the low family, then he is considered a Brahman, dealt with as a Brahman. Right? The Brahman who's in the Brahman family, but doesn't act like what he acts like a Shudra, then is to be considered a Shudra, but it doesn't mean you deal with him as one, because he's dressed as a Brahman, right? Because remember, charity given to someone who dresses as a Brahman gives you a double result of an ordinary, right? So the etiquette still applies. They're still dealt with as if they're Brahmins in the way of just the general etiquette, not in the way of donations or getting them to do pujas or yajnas or anything for you, right? Does that make sense? In other words, you don't engage them in Brahminical activities. But it doesn't mean that by etiquette you don't deal with them as a Brahmin. Yes?
Yes.
Right? Like that. Okay. So end here. We'll continue Thursday.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki What language were you speaking yesterday?